development. Alejandro?
Okay, thank you very much. If there is a problem with the sound, please let me know. So, okay, so let me start with the first slide. So today I want to tell you about some recent calculations that we have done in collaboration with Amit Ghosh and Ernesto Freden. So the things I want to present today are it's related to two papers that are on the archive. I will give you the reference. So we can go to the first, the next slide. I'd like to start with a general introduction to the framework of I hear a lot of noise from some of you. If you could press the...
Could everyone try to mute their microphones, please?
In slide number one, I just want to give the general, which I just want to remind you of some black hole thermodynamics. So black holes the final the end result of a gravitational collapse. There is an important theorem in classical GR that tells us that all the stationary black holes and Einstein-Maxwell theory are completely described or members of the Kerr-Newman family, which is which contains only three parameters. So from physically, one expects that the end result of a realistic gravitational collapse will be described. So once we of course, the collapse would be some very dynamical situation that has to be described, difficult to describe in terms of Einstein's matter field equations. But if we wait long enough so that all the radiation goes into infinity and the system settles down the stationary state, then this theorem tells us that, this theorem combined with the situation that we reach this stationary situation tells us that the space-time geometry is well approximated or described by a member of the Kerr-Newman family, which is handled by three parameters: the total mass of the space-time, the angular momentum, and the electric charge. So in this slide, there are some definitions that will be important to follow. So a rotating Kerr black hole has an angular velocity. The horizon angular velocity will be denoted with capital omega. A measure of the strength of the gravitational force at the horizon is the surface gravity, which is which can be given a definition in terms of the generator that is written there. We denote the surface gravity kappa, and the electromagnetic potential on the horizon is denoted by capital phi. So it is already one first indication that this system might behave thermodynamically is the fact that no matter how we start, what the initial conditions are, we end up with a final black hole, which is described only by a handful of parameters, these three parameters. This is reminiscent of what happens with the box of a gas in thermodynamics. It doesn't matter what is the initial conditions we give to the gas. If we only with some microscopic parameters such as the energy and the volume, temperature. In the context of classical GR, one can prove a series of laws. Some of them rigorously proved, and these are the theorems: the first law, the second law, the third law is something that one can get convinced of by this violated. The zero law states that the dust is constant on the horizon. The horizon of this stationary black hole is not necessarily, is generically not spherically symmetric, yet kappa is constant all over the place. An important law that is the first law, says that the black hole, shown in the figure, will throw into the black hole. This will we would say not stationary, but if we wait long enough, reach a new stationary state, like 2, also described by a member of the Kahneman family, and the parameter is small, it's infinitesimal, and the relation in the initial and the final values of the parameter is entity, which is called the first law, which is reminiscent with much like the first law of thermodynamics. One has that the change in the mass of the gravity over 8 pi times delta A plus with the work terms omega times change in angular momentum plus phi times the change in Q. So the second law then is Hawking area theorem, and which is more general than the first law. It is applicable to black holes in general, as you know. So these are essentially the things I wanted to mention here in this warming up slide. So we can go to the next slide. And slide number 2. So this analogy with thermodynamics that we evoked in the previous transparency becomes a fact with the calculation of Hawking. Hawking realized in the 70s that by computing the scattering of by putting in the background space-time background corresponding to the gravitational collapse that ends up with a stationary black hole in the asymptotic future, putting on that background a test field, a quantum test field, initially in this Penrose diagram in the far past, in the idealized far away in the past, idealized by Scribe minus past null infinity. If we put in a test field in its vacuum state, then one can show that for late observers, idealized by observers that are in future null infinity close to I plus, these observers will see a background that has become stationary, but with an afterglow of thermal particles coming out of the black hole at a temperature given exactly by kappa over 2 pi. So black holes, one concludes from this calculation, from this semi-classical calculation, do behave as thermodynamical systems. And then from the first law, if I take, now I can take seriously the first law in analogy to the first law of a thermodynamical system, and from there I can read off the value of the entropy. So it is Hawking calculates the temperature observed by observers at infinity, late observers, and from there infers the value of the entropy that corresponds to the area over 4 in Planck units. So This is something very trivial, but I want to emphasize it is important that one does not compute the entropy directly. So Hawking computes temperature and uses the first law to infer the value of the black hole entropy. So we can go to slide number 3. So in this slide, I just want to remind you of something that is quite familiar to you. If we want to deal with the problem of black hole entropy in loop quantum, well, of course, coming back to the previous slide, the fact that entropy, a direct calculation of the entropy of the black hole, has become a standard test for any candidate theory of quantum gravity. So fundamental theory, one should be able to compute from the fundamental theory, from first principles, the value of the entropy of the black hole. So we are in slide number 3. So the problem that one faces is what is the meaning of a black hole in the context of a quantum theory of gravity? And one realizes that the usual definition, which is based on global on the knowledge of the space-time for all times, namely in terms of the usual definition that is based on the Penrose diagrams and the notion of future infinity, cannot be good for describing black holes and classical black holes in the context of the quantum theory. The reason is very simple. The black holes evaporate, so it is most likely the usual definition just does not make any sense. And I am showing here on the right two possibilities that have been evoked in the literature. The usual old paradigm of black hole evaporation, you see this Penrose diagram, or what is thought to be the picture according to Loop quantum gravity. In both cases, thinking of the black hole as being the region that is left out of the past of future null infinity is certainly not appropriate. We can go to slide number 4. For that reason, Ashtika and collaborators have introduced the notion, one needs a local notion, and the way we will use is to use the notion of isolated horizon. So essentially, an isolated horizon is a local definition of a horizon that captures the physical notion of a black hole in equilibrium. Many details are not going to be necessary for what I want to talk about today. So I have given here the definition in all details, but for what we need, we can think of the isolated horizon here as a boundary condition that is given on a null surface that is required to have the geometric properties that we want and like for horizons that are in equilibrium, the properties that we know from stationary black holes. So we can go, but this requirement takes the form only of a boundary condition on the null surface, and radiation data are left free in the bulk in a suitable fashion. So we can go to slide number 5, where I give more or less the plan of the talk. Essentially, point 1 and 2 contain the plan of what I want to say in what follows. So the first part of the talk would be about classical general relativity, and the point is that I will try to convince you that there is a well-defined notion of a quasi-local energy for black hole horizon close to equilibrium, and an associated local first law for black hole mechanics, and that this not only this local first law is dynamical in nature, but can be interpreted as in a dynamical way. So we have a stationary situation, we perturb it, and we get to a new stationary situation, as in the picture I show you before. But it's applicable, it will be local. So it provides a dynamical process version of the first law for isolated horizon. And this will be essential for the second part, because having at hand an energy notion will allow us to revisit the statistical mechanical treatment of the quantized horizon degrees of freedom. And we will see that with this new view that comes from this classical result, it is possible to see that the black hole entropy calculation that comes out is consistent with the semi-classical results of Hawking for all values of the emissive parameter. So our claim is that it's not necessary to fix the emissive parameter to a fixed numerical value as previously thought. And so the emissive parameter remains free. And remaining free now, the emissive parameter will leads naturally to a manifold of possible observable effects. So the third point is that by the end, if I have time, I will mention one possibility for such observable effects, and that possibility is a little bit speculative at the moment, but what I want to emphasize is that the fact that if I convince you of point 1 and 2, then it should be obvious that The immunity parameter now should be thought of as a fundamental constant that will certainly lead to observable effects. So we can go maybe not of the kind that I will present, but some observable effects should be present. We go to slide number 6. Well, it's just the title of the first part, and I give you there a reference to the paper in which we describe these calculations. So the idea is to present a local version of the first law of black hole mechanics, and I will do this in steps. So I will convince you of the existence of this local first law by starting with a simpler situation, which deals with stationary black holes, and improving my presentation in a few steps. So making the calculation more and more local, as you will see in a moment. So let's start with the simplest, the most direct, but the less local version of this calculation. So go to slide number 7. So here we are in the context of stationary black holes. So think of a black hole solution given by Kern-Newman space-time. Kern-Newman space-time are stationary and axisymmetric. So there are two Keeling fields. One that I call Xi is the time-like Keeling field associated to stationarity, and in usual coordinates, this would be d by dt. And another Keeling field is Psi, which is associated to axisymmetry, and in the usual coordinates is d by d phi. So the horizon is a null surface, and which is preserved by so the generators of the horizon, in fact, is a linear combination of the Keeling fields d by dt and d by d phi, and this is written in the middle of the slide. So chi is the name, denotes the null generators of the horizon, which is a linear combination, which is psi d by dt plus omega, and this gives the omega is a constant, is the angular velocity of the horizon times d by d phi. So of course, this being Keeling, this is a Keeling vector field. So the vector field chi has a well-defined meaning outside the horizon. It turns out to be time-like just outside the horizon in the exterior region. So I'm going to introduce a preferred family of observers, and this preferred family of observers is closely related to the usual zero angular momentum observers or SAMOs, but it's not exactly the same thing. The difference is not really relevant here. So think of a family of observers which have four velocity as given in the center of the slide there, UA. UA is just given by the Keeling field chi, which becomes null at the horizon, and it's time-like outside, and I normalize the four velocity so that it represents the four velocity of a physical observer. Now, these observers are placed at a fixed proper distance, L, as shown in the figure. As we will see in a moment, saying that these observers are at fixed distance L is equivalent to saying that they have constant acceleration, proper acceleration, 1 over L. This will come in a moment. And the only assumption is that this scale L that I introduced now is much smaller, so L squared is much smaller than the area of the black hole. We can go to slide number 8. So what I want to do now is to translate, to rewrite the content of the usual first law in terms of physical quantities which are measured by our local observers that we just introduced. So in order to do that, think of the following thought experiment. We throw a test particle from infinity, and we assume that the test particle will be absorbed by the black hole. So look at the right-hand side of the slide. So we assume this test particle moves according to the Lorentz force equation of motion. So this particle is in principle charged. If the particle was not charged, then it would move along a geodesic. If the particle is charged, there is this Lorentz force on the right-hand side of the first equation, and F there is the field strength of the electromagnetic field of the background. Remember that we are dealing with the Kerr-Newman background, which has where the electromagnetic potential is non-vanishing. There is a charge. So the symmetries of the background are written there. So as we said, the space-time is stationary and axisymmetric, which are the two equations, the lead derivative of the metric along these two Killing fields is zero. But also the electromagnetic potential, the vector potential, is also symmetric, stationary and axisymmetric. Due to this and to the particle's equation of motion, one can easily show that the quantities, that they are conserved quantities, which are written on the right-hand side, on the bottom of the right-hand side of the slide. One of them I call it E and the other L. So we can go to slide number 9. On the left-hand side of slide number 9, I have just recalled the conserved quantities, the expression of the conserved quantities that I just have written in the previous slide. And on the right-hand side, we study the physical interpretation of these conserved quantities. And the physical interpretation is obvious. It corresponds for E. If E means the value of the energy of the particle as measured by inertial observers at infinity, the space-time is asymptotically flat. Xi is the stationary Killing field, which is normalized so that at infinity it matches, it corresponds to the time translation of inertial observers that see the black hole at rest. So E has a very clear physical meaning, it's the energy of the particle, and L also, it corresponds to the angular momentum as measured by observers at infinity. Again, the Killing field, the axial Killing field is normalized in the appropriate way, so that is the correct physical interpretation. So we can go to slide number 10. So for the local observer, that is at fixed distance L, the particle, the infalling particle that will be absorbed by the black hole, has a local energy equal to minus the inner product of the four velocity of the particle, W. I should have said that, but well, I think it's pretty clear. W is the four velocity of the particle, inner product with the four velocity of the observer. So this is the local energy notion of according to the stage, the observer close to the horizon. In other words, if the local observer would put a calorimeter and would avoid the particle from falling into the black hole, then that is exactly the amount of joules that will be measured by the calorimeter. So this is the physical notion of energy for the local observer. One thing I should have said before is, by definition, our local observers see, remember that they were chosen to be proportional to the Killing field close to the horizon. By definition, these observers are stationary observers. They see the geometry around them stationary. The geometry does not change. They see the horizon at rest. So these are the good observers if we think of, if we are looking for observers that are to do thermodynamics with the system. These are the observers that see the system, namely the horizon, which is the aim of this local formulation, at rest and in stationary. Okay, so this is the local energy. We can go to slide number 11. So we assume that the particle is absorbed by the black hole, and then that would be if we wait long enough, then the black hole would settle down. We settle down to a new equilibrium state given by a new mass, a new charge, and a new angular momentum, and we expect the change in these parameters to be given as in the first set of equations that you see on the right in slide 11. So we can use the first law to calculate the change of the area of the black hole, and this is what we do on the bottom of the right hand side. We can go to slide number 12. In slide number 12 on the right, I just rewrote the result from previous slide that tells us how much the area of the black hole changes, of the horizon changes, in terms of the conserved quantities, the energy, the angular momentum at infinity, and the charge Q. Now, the local observer now, as we said, will see a particle with local energy, E local, falling into what he or she calls the system. Recall that the four velocity was given by the normalized Killing field that becomes null at the horizon. That is the equation I just rewrite there. So we can express the local energy in terms of conserved quantities. So I am looking at the equation on top of the blue arrow, I just used the definition of the four velocity of the observer. And now a simple calculation, I mean, the calculation is trivial if we are dealing with the charge equal to zero particle, because you already recognize on the numerator the energy and the angular momentum. If the particle is charged, the calculation is equally simple, but it requires just one line that I haven't included here. And the result is on the bottom on the right-hand side of the present slide. So this is the relationship between the local notion of energy, the energy that would be measured by a calorimeter if the particle was captured by this observer, in terms of the notions of energy, angular momentum, and charge that have a physical meaning for observers at infinity. So we can go to slide number 13. So now, using the fact that the result from that we obtained from the global from the usual first law for the change of the area and the expression of the local energy that we just obtained in terms of the conserved quantities, you see these two equations on the right hand side combine into the equation below the blue arrow. And now if I define kappa bar as on the bottom on the right hand side, kappa bar being the surface, the usual surface gravity divided by the norm of the Killing field, then I obtain the equation on the bottom there that relates directly the notion of local energy of the particle with the change in area and kappa bar. Let's go to slide number 14.
So, Alex, so therefore, as you change L, little l, the scale, delta A is presumably the same, right? Or I'm confused as to what is supposed to go to infinity.
Yeah, L will be fixed all the time in this calculation.
But where does it enter, though?
It enters in kappa bar. Just a moment, in the next slide you will see.
Okay.
Just one second.
Kappa bar
will depend on L. But I mean, you might fix L and I might fix another L. Then
yes.
Our kappa bars are different, which is right, which is, you know. But
exactly.
Nonetheless, as L decreases, kappa bar goes to infinity.
That's right.
Which is also right. I mean, which is a, so, but then in that equation, what am I supposed to think of? I mean, am I supposed to say that the area delta A goes to infinity or epsilon local goes to infinity? I would imagine epsilon.
No, delta A is always the same because it's related to the conserved quantities at infinity. It's the notion of energy that will readjust to satisfy this equation.
So the statement is that
if you wait just a second, I think we can look at that question in a simpler way, because I will write what kappa bar of L is in a moment. Okay, so just wait until the next slide, please. Okay. So, okay, so the local observer sees a particle with local energy, E local, going into what he calls his system. So it is appropriate to call, to associate this E local to the change in the energy as seen by our family of local observers. So I am referring to the equation right below the red title there. And if we do so, then the change in the energy according to these local observers, which are placed at a fixed L from the horizon, this change in the energy is directly related to the change in the area as shown in the last equation of slide number 14. And now let's go to 15 because everything will be much clearer. So if we, now we are all in slide number 15. So we have this relationship between the change in the energy according to our local observers is equal to kappa bar over 8 pi times the change in the area. Now, a result of a direct calculation, but this is a result that one can convince oneself that is absolutely expectable, shows that kappa bar, which I recall is defined as kappa divided by the norm of the healing field chi, is exactly equal to 1 over L in the approximation that we are making. So this is an important thing because we are deriving a local version of first law. I would like to call this a local version of first law. We are in the context of stationary black holes for the moment. We will generalize this in a moment. But now, kappa bar is just a universal constant. Kappa bar is 1 over L. It does not know what is that. It does not know anything about the parameters of the black hole we started with. It does not depend on M, J, or Q. So we can integrate the first law that we have derived in order to obtain a quasi-local notion of energy. And this is the equation that is in the blue frame on the bottom of slide number 15. So the energy, as measured by our local observers at distance L, is given by the area, just proportional to the area, divided by 8 pi L, where we have fixed the integration constant of this first law by the natural requirement that this local notion of quasi-local notion of energy vanishes if the area of the black hole is zero. So does that answer the question, Abhay?
Yeah. So you are saying that E does go to infinity as L shrinks. I mean, yes. In your mind, L is 6, but I mean, to me, L is just, you fix one, I can fix another one. And so,
yes.
But then, I'm still not, I mean, the first law, as you say, in your, for the local version, is delta E is equal to delta A upon 8 pi times L, right? But it's a funny thing to integrate it, right? Because, I mean, in the infinity zone form, you're assuming that there is actually a black hole, and that L was supposed to be a distance from the horizon of a black hole.
Yes.
But then I don't understand what integration means, because now suddenly we're talking about previously delta E was, I dropped a particle and that was changing the energy of the black hole. But suddenly here, E is the energy of the black hole itself. And the whole procedure doesn't work, right? Because in order for the procedure to work, you would have to start with no black hole and drop particle by particle. But then I can't really use the argument if I drop particle by particle to obtain this black hole of energy.
I am saying that if the black hole is present, then these local observers, which are by construction fixed at a given L, at a given distance L, then will agree on the first law, namely that relates changes in their local notion of energy with changes in the parameters of the black hole. The only one that enters is the area, according to the equation I write there, and that they will use for all practical purposes. I mean, in this kind of experiments in which we make small changes. Starting from a stationary situation, the energy of their system is A over A pi L. It depends on this on this parameter L, and this will be something that we put by hand. But I will try to convince you by the end of the talk that the value of L is totally irrelevant, and it will disappear from all of the relevant physical predictions. For example, the value of the entropy.
Alejandro, I think if I understand the question Abai is asking, it's really about whether there shouldn't be some integration constant here, and would that affect any of your arguments that follow if you just had to concede that what you're calling energy is related to the area by the blue equation plus the integration constant?
I think it is more than that. I mean, this order of little L are important in the integration. I mean, that is the reason why we cannot integrate the ordinary first law, right? Because I mean, kappa is constant to first order, right? In such a process, kappa also changes. But the statement is that for the first law, we can keep it constant because to first order.
Yes, but kappa here does not change. Kappa does not change. It's by the setting up of the notion of the observers that we are using.
No, but the change is always in the term O of L term, right? I mean, there, presumably, the parameters of the black hole will also feature because that's for dimensional reasons. It's not just going to be little L. It is going to be some other things also. And so that won't change. I mean, just like ordinary kappa, also in the first law, ordinary kappa doesn't change, but because it's only to first order, it doesn't change, but it does change. I mean, you know, because obviously if I throw in a whole bunch of particles and then change the mass of the black hole from, say, increase it by a factor of 2, then kappa is not constant, the ordinary kappa. But I believe that your terms O of L are exactly important in this. So it's more than what Lee is saying. It's not only just a constant.
No, I don't think so, because we are throwing away things that are of the form OL times delta A, which are also infinitesimal on the first law.
I mean, to put it in a different way, I mean, as you make the black hole grow, if you're going to keep L fixed, you have to move the observer, right? Because the horizon grows.
Yes. I have to keep there. I mean, one way of putting it is that kappa bar is, in fact, one can easily convince oneself that kappa bar is nothing else but the local acceleration of these observers. So this is exactly the expression of Rindler acceleration of observers that move away from the Rindler horizon, for instance. So the fact that we get 1 over L, I'm not answering the question, but I am adding some, I am getting to your point, Jorge, in a moment. The fact that we get only 1 over L is should be expected from the equivalence principle, that if we are close enough to the horizon, then the local acceleration just goes like 1 over the proper distance to the horizon. Now, keeping L constant, and now I am getting to answering to the question, keeping L constant is to readjust the acceleration so that it's always the same before and after the addition of matter.
So for that family of sort of moving observers, then the integration that you do seems to be correct. That is, observers that readjust themselves as the black hole grows.
Yes. So these are observers that are used to interpret things in the stationary situation, right? Of course, when I make an addition of matter, then I will have to readjust to the correct family of observers that has the same L or the same acceleration.
But if L is kept constant, I mean, when you integrate in this equation, right, the first one. So you are starting, the limits of integration are presumably zero area and zero energy or mass of the black hole to whatever the present energy is. But clearly your assumption that L squared is much less than A is violated if L is fixed. Because
I can make that quantity as small as I want. That's the point. It's an independent. It's something that I have the control to change at will. I am choosing this parameter to be as small as I want, and then to be constant.
It will have to be shifted to met zero, right? Because if you're integrating from zero air energy and zero area to the final area A and the energy E, then since L squared is always much less than A, the only solution would be L is equal to zero, which will satisfy your condition L squared is much less than A. I think we should go on, but I'm uncomfortable with your integration of this law, but we should just go on.
Okay, so maybe in order to go on, we could also say that the energy that I am giving there is the one that does satisfy the first law that we derive with this physical process. Okay, so your point is that this might differ from what I write there by a constant. Okay, and that will not have any effect in what follows, I believe.
Okay. Can I ask another question? Which is a bit separate. Because in your logic, you want to make everything, this is Laurent, you want to make everything being local. So I was wondering, what kind of local measurement does the observer make in order to know that he is at distance L? Is there a specific...
Okay. One local observer is the acceleration. So he just measures his weight. He knows his... he measures... Yeah, this is a good question. So he does two things, which are in principle possible by local measurements. First, he measures his acceleration. That's easy to do. And then he checks that he is following a stationary the orbits of a Killing field, namely that the geometry around him doesn't change. Okay. So that he's stationary with respect to the horizon.
Okay.
But the construction could never be entirely local, right? Because the observer cannot tell if he or she is outside a black hole or a very compact neutron star by local measurements only.
I think we can discuss this for a long time. I think they are. I partially agree with you, but black holes in the quantum theory are. You will see that this whole structure is introduced as a fiducial structure at the end. So I'm not sure if all this is really relevant for what I want to say. Nevertheless, classically, it's true that there are no local measurements that allow you to check whether you are close or not from to the horizon. Now, quantum black holes radiate. And there are ways using the thermal radiation to check whether you are approaching if you are stationary the horizon or not by measuring the radiation. Okay.
Good point. Thanks.
But it seems to me that, you know, I mean, concerning the question of Jorge, which is a key question, because you want really to be everything local, it seems to me that you're saying that you can make the distinction, because the difference between a black hole and a neutron star is that in the black hole, 1 over L, the energy will go to infinity, and in the neutron star, you will eat the surface of the neutron star before going to infinity.
Yes.
So a priori, you're saying that you can make local measurements that can distinguish the two.
I agree. In fact, by measuring the acceleration of the observers and by communicating with the other observers, for instance, I will distinguish the situation in a neutron star. If I have constant acceleration, I will be moving. I have to check that the acceleration is increasing and diverging as I approach something. And then in doing that, the area is getting to a fixed value, right? That wouldn't be possible in a neutron star, right? I will reach the neutron star before the acceleration diverges. But all this, I'm not sure if this is. Maybe I should go on and we can come back to this by the end. But I want to...
Please continue.
Thank you.
Okay, so let's go to slide number 16. So now I present you a slightly refined version, which shows that a more local derivation is possible. What was not local about the previous one? The previous, in fact, one probably can argue and get rid of the non-local aspects of the previous one, if one think about it, but there are some things that sound global in the previous derivation. One of the things is that we were referring to observers at infinity, and we were interpreting physical quantities at infinity, and that we had to normalize our Killing vector fields at infinity so that they would correspond to the usual time translations and rotations at infinity. So we needed global notions of the space-time to do the previous calculation. So the one I'm giving now is a refinement of that one, and we will see immediately that the notion of infinity is no longer necessary on the one hand. And the other thing in which this calculation is better is the fact that in the previous calculation we had to use the physical argument that once the black hole absorbs the particle, it would readjust its parameters to a new stationary situation, and this is something we say on physical grounds, but we never used really Einstein's equations to do that. Now, in the present calculation, I will do use Einstein's equations. But first, it might seem that it would be very hard to use Einstein's equations, but then we see that dealing with the first law is dealing with small perturbations of a stationary state of a black hole, and so small perturbations can be dealt with using linearized gravity, and this is what we're going to do here. So instead of throwing particles now, we think of throwing a field. Now, it's not a test field. It's a field that will be considered small and will be described by an energy momentum tensor, delta TAB. On the figure on the right-hand side, you see these green arrows and delta TAB. Now, on the left, I give a definition of the conserved current, JA, which is essentially the contraction of the energy momentum tensor with our Killing field chi. And because chi is a Killing field, then this current is conserved. So the divergence of this current is zero. So we can apply the Gauss law to the region, the space-time region, which is bounded between the horizon H, look at the figure, and the wall sheet of our local observers, WO. And Gauss's law tells us that the flux across the horizon of our conserved current must be equal to the flux across the wall sheet of our observers, and this is equation number one. Now, there is a little subtlety, which is just a standard technical thing about the Gauss law with the null boundaries. When one has a null boundary, the flux must be defined in terms of generators of the horizon that I call here K. So these are null geodesics tangent to the horizon, which are affinely parameterized. The affine parameter is V here. And K of V is equal to 1. So K is D by DV, essentially. So in equation 1, with this, one can give a meaning to the flux of the current across the horizon. This is the left-hand side of equation 1. And the right-hand side of equation 1 is the flux across the world sheet of observers, where N is the normal to the world sheet. Now we can do a little bit of work on both sides. Let's start with the left-hand side. One can express the Killing generators chi in terms of the affine parameter k, as we have done on the left-hand side of equation 2. And this the relationship intervenes the value of the surface gravity kappa and the affine parameter v. And on the right-hand side, what I've done is to express chi in terms of the four velocity of our local observers. And so, therefore, I get a factor of the norm of the vector field chi, which by definition is constant, I can remove it from the integral. And this is what I've done on the right. And there we identify what we have is the flux of tau, the local notion of energy, according to the local observers, and this is what we're going to call delta E. Okay? So one observation, why is this more local than the previous thing? It's because we only need to use the properties of the background geometry in this little sandwich between the world sheet and the horizon. Okay? We don't need to normalize the Killing fields at infinity as before. The reason is very simple. Already at the level of equation one, you see that the Killing field appears on both sides of the equation. So multiplying the Killing field by 45 doesn't change anything. So we have it on both sides. So this argument that I will conclude in a moment does not need the normalization of the Killing field. So now on the left-hand side of equation two contains the energy momentum tensor contracted with the affinely parameterized generators K. And this is exactly the source that appears in the Ray-Chadur equation that tells me how the expansion of the null generators changes along the generators. So this is equation three, in which this is the linearized Ray-Chadur equation. So what I am using is the fact that to zero order, the expansion is zero because the horizon was stationary, and the shear is also, and the twist are zero. So the Ray-Chadur equation in the linearized approximation takes the form 3. So I can rewrite equation 2 as in equation 4, in which I have passed the norm of chi to the left-hand side, and then a simple calculation shows that what we have there is our local first law again. Kappa bar appears immediately. The fact that we have kappa bar is related to the fact that things are independent of the normalization of the Killing fields. So here we are doing linear perturbations of a stationary background, and using the Ray-Chadur equations, which is in our case Einstein's equations, we prove the validity of the first law that we derived in a more rudimentary way in the previous slide. So we can go to slide number 17. Now, even more local argument can be constructed using the notion of isolated horizons. So the ingredients that we need is our family of stationary observers. These stationary observers exist because one can show that the generators of the horizon, which is one of the ingredients of the definition of isolated horizons, which are defined up to normalization, up to constant, right? There is an equivalent class of generators. They imply that the metric at the horizon is Lie drag by these generators. In addition, there is a way of extending these generators in the vicinity of the horizon. Moreover, there is a way of introducing physical coordinates or coordinates adapted to the structure of the isolated horizon, so that one can even write the metric, the space-time metric, close to the horizon. One has an expansion in powers of r minus r naught. So there is a coordinate r. So details. There is a coordinate v, which is the coordinate along the horizon. You look at the picture. You can look at the picture. Then there are angular coordinates, which are not explicitly written here. And there is a radial coordinate r, which is chosen as an affine parameter along null geodesics, which are along the null normal n, which can be shown to exist and be uniquely fixed once you have an appropriate chi. In the usual literature of isolated horizons, chi is called L. I am calling it chi because of what the previous slides. So one has a form of the local the metric close to the horizon. One has that the metric is Lie dragged right at the horizon. So we can introduce our stationary observers, and one can use the structure provided by the first two lines there to prove that, in fact, so one can reproduce the calculation I gave in the previous slide, in this case as well. And the relevant thing is a kappa bar, which again, here is given by, I should have said this, in the first line, there is the surface gravity of the isolated horizon, kappa isolated horizon. This quantity is intrinsically defined in terms of the generator of the horizon, but it is ambiguous because if we multiply the generator by a constant, then kappa isolated horizon gets modified. However, kappa bar is not does not suffer from this ambiguity, and one can directly compute kappa bar and obtain that again is given by 1 over L. So this is not surprising. It's just telling us that very, very close to the horizon, the geometry, if we want to be stationary and approach the horizon, then our acceleration will diverge like 1 over the distance to the horizon, as in the Rindler space-time.
Alex, I'm confused about it. Because the sky, as you say, is defined up to constant rescaling at the isolated horizon, right? I mean, that is null normal.
Yes.
But of course, there, the norm of high is 0, therefore, of course, you don't want to work there. You want to work a little bit late, a little bit outside.
Yes.
L, but how do I extend? I mean, why do you think that one can extend the sky uniquely outside the horizon? From
I am extending it. There is an N. This equation is something that one can find in the literature of isolated horizons. So, so in order to extend it, one needs to require something to chi, and the requirement that fixes chi is the requirement that it is Lie dragged along n at the horizon, so that chi commutes with n, which is by the way what happens in the local coordinate systems in which I write the metric in the first line.
So your prescription for Lie dragging n first of all, right? Because you need to get it. I mean, n is just defined at the isolated horizon. So you need to get n outside the isolated horizon. So you're giving a series of prescriptions. That's what you're saying to define chi.
So n is given at the horizon.
Right.
And then one has these null surfaces that go that are transversal to the horizon.
But n is then Lie dragged. I mean, there are several extensions of n, right? N is either Lie dragged or is parallel propagator or something. And then once you have n, you could take chi and Lie drag it or parallel propagator along n. So I'm just trying to understand what your prescription is.
Is that n commutes with chi?
And n itself is, how is it spread out? I mean, n is only defined at the horizon, but we need to get it outside the horizon. So is there a fixed prescription for that? I mean, if it is too technical, then we can talk about it later.
Yes, I think it's better if we talk about it later. I am requiring an n to commute with chi, and this is enough to prove the equation that Lie of chi of the metric is 0. Because
We'll talk later. Because you have to have a prescription to actually drag n off the horizon. But we'll talk later. Thank you.
Okay. So. One can reproduce the previous calculation and obtain the local first law that we derived using the thought experiments in perturbation theory in the previous cases. A nice simple example in which one can test all this and check this in a setting in which everything is transparent and clear is the Vaidya space-time setting. The Vaidya space-time represents the what happens with an initially, what can be interpreted as an initially Schwarzschild stationary, I mean, this is a special kind of IGS spacetime in which I just throw a shell of null matter at a given time, and then I stop the flow at some point. So initially one has an isolated horizon, H. So look at the left of the left-hand side of the slide 18. We are in slide 18. I don't remember if I told you to change slides. Initially we have an isolated horizon, which is depicted in blue here on the bottom. Now we have an inflow of null matter during a short period. So the horizon grows. There is an apparent horizon that is marked there, or a dynamical horizon that is denoted AH here in the middle. We're assuming that the inflow of matter is infinitesimal, so that we are relating two stationary situations, an initial isolated horizon IH1 with the final isolated horizon IH2, and that their areas have changed just a little bit. So we are in the setting of the first law. And now we have our local observers, which are defined as stationary, with acceleration 1 over L with respect to IH2. Now, one can evaluate the flux of energy flux on WO and calculate delta E. And then one can explicitly see, because here the solution, the exact solution is known of the evolution of the spacetime, and check that the first law is satisfied exactly in the first and that. So we see here that we have a clear dynamical interpretation of this first law. Delta E on the bottom relationship on slide 18 is the amount of energy measured by the calorimeters carried by our local observers. And delta A refers to the difference between the initial area of isolated horizon number one and the final final area, isolated horizon number two, minus the initial area of the isolated horizon number one. Okay, so let's go to next slide. So the claim is that in this approximation where we fix L and where L square is much more than the area of the black hole, then there is a local version of first law valid for this family of observers, which are defined in terms of which are stationary, which see the system which see the horizon stationary, which are stationary with respect to the horizon. These are the observers that are good for doing local thermodynamical or statistical mechanical calculations, as we will argue in a moment. The first law becomes very simple. It relates the change in energy with the change in area directly with this quantity kappa bar. And there is a quasi-local notion of energy that is given simply by the area divided by a pi, the scale L. So this is the main point of the first part of the talk. So now we can go to slide number 20 and make a little break. Now we go to quantum theory, and I will try to show you in what all these things are relevant for the calculation of entropy. So let's go to slide number 21. So on the top of 21, I write the spectrum of the area operator, of the area of the isolated horizon operator. So the states of the isolated horizon are given by spin networks states and that puncture the horizon at different points. So the state of the isolated horizon, in fact, is given by the set of punctures which carry spin labels. And the area of the horizon is given by the top equation. Let's go to 22. Well, and of course, there is an area gap There's an error gap that is written there on the right, and that error gap is modulated or is controlled by the value of the immunity parameter. So now let's go to 22, which is essentially the same. The difference is that now we are introducing a Hamiltonian in view of the classical results. We postulate that the Hamiltonian of the isolated horizon is therefore quantized and given by the expression on top is just the area operator divided by 8 pi L, where L is a fiducial quantity that we introduce at this point and we will remove from relevant physical quantities at the end. So in this quantum calculation, this scale should be interpreted as a regulator. And nothing important, I will argue, will depend on this value. Now, this regulator is a natural thing and has been evoked in the past. And unfortunately, I forgot to write the reference here. There should be some reference here. But in 83, York and before, based on some results of Israel and Hezhisek of the 80s. Showed that if one considers the back reaction of Hawking radiation for a black hole, which is large enough, for a very large black hole, then one finds that the horizon is stretched, is displaced from the position of its classical position, and the physical horizon appears a little bit outside, and this limit of large black hole, it is the real horizon is found at this proper distance of the order of the Planck length outside of the horizon. So I'm saying this because it is natural to think of this regulator here, L, as being something of the order of the Planck length. And this is the mind setting that we had when we did this calculation. But it is important to emphasize that at the end of the day, the value of L will not be important for the relevant things. So if I take the Hamiltonian as being proportional to the area, as I've written in this slide, then there are two observations that I'd like to make. The first one, A, is that the value of the energy of the system can change by a rearrangement of spins without changing the number of punctures. And that in the large area regime, this kind of transition allows for area jumps that are for energy jumps now, that are as small as one would like to. And this is because the area spectrum becomes exponentially dense in the positive real numbers, as it is well known. However, there is another process in which we can change the energy, which is discrete to all scales, and this is by the emission, by the change in the number of punctures. And the fact that this is always discrete is directly related with the fact that there is an area gap that now becomes an energy gap. And so this physical discussion is just to anticipate the what will happen in a moment. We will see that because of that, it's natural to expect the existence of non-trivial chemical potential in the statistical mechanical description of the system. So we can go now to slide number 23. Okay, so the way we calculate black hole entropy in loop quantum gravity is the following. We consider quantum states that are physical at the horizon, but we are not able at the present stage of development of the theory to do something that seems quite important for the thermodynamical considerations, which is we are not able for the moment to really deal with the physical states in the bulk. So ideally what one would like to do is to count states which are physical at the horizon, or quantum states of the isolated horizon, while they are physical in the bulk and approximate in a suitable fashion semi-classical states describing a Schwarzschild geometry, at least near the horizon. I think in order to derive all the thermal properties of black holes from the fundamental theory, this ingredient is important because Hawking radiation, and it's not a property of the horizon alone. It is a property of more than just the horizon, and the near horizon geometry is one can easily argue that at least the near horizon geometry it is important that this near horizon geometry gets close to or is described by Schwarzschild near horizon geometry. Sorry for Schwarzschild, I meant stationary black hole near horizon geometry. Yeah, this is an old slide. I should have corrected that. So we're not in the position of doing that. So what we're going to do instead is to provide this missing ingredient by physical input. And I'm talking about the bottom figure now on slide 23. The physical input is that we have this isolated horizon physical states. And the physical input for the bulk state will be represented by a thermal bath at the appropriate Unruh temperature, which is the one seen by the family of stationary observers that fix this proper distance L. So we're going to bring this ingredient from the outside. And I will argue in a moment that this is not new, what I'm saying here. It's something that we have been doing already when, for instance, we fixed the emissivity parameter to a particular numerical value in previous calculations. I will make this more clear in a moment. So let's go to slide number 24. So because we have a Hamiltonian, then the entropy calculation can be done in the canonical ensemble framework. And I'm going to do it in the canonical ensemble framework because for some things it's much clearer, but the results can be obtained in any of the other ensembles. The results that I will refer to now can also be obtained directly in the microcanonical ensemble that has been the usual setting. So the canonical partition function is written, so we are in slide 24. I must say that the consideration of the canonical ensemble is something that has some history. Kirill Krasnov has considered it first, I think. Also, there are papers by Seth Major and more recently by Barbero and Villasenor in which this canonical ensemble is used. These calculations are closely related and technically very closely related to the ones I will present here. So the canonical partition function is given in equation 1, where I introduced, so the partition function depends on the number of punctures n, and and beta, and the eigenvalues of the energy are given there. It's just the thing that we expect from the area operator. So an important remark is that from the point of view of statistical mechanical calculation, we are dealing with a system that is just like a gas of non-interacting particles. Each puncture is one particle, and each of these particles has a peculiar spectrum, which is given by the square root of jj plus 1 times lg square over l. So one can easily compute the partition function. This is equation 2, and from there compute the entropy, and the entropy follows is given in equation 3. Now our physical ingredient comes in. We said that we want to set the temperature to the local temperature, the Unruh temperature of our observers that are at distance L from the horizon. That means that the temperature, the temperature is just given by kappa bar, the local acceleration over 2 pi times h bar, which is L Planck square in our units, So this is the temperature is written below equation 3. If I replace the temperature, namely in beta of the of equation 3, we find the entropy that is given in the red frame on the left. The entropy is given by a certain function of the immunity parameter times the number of punctures plus the area over 4 L Planck square, where this sigma of gamma is written on the frame, red frame on the right hand side. Let's go to 25 now. So at thermal equilibrium, one can also write an equation that gives you the mean value of the energy. And this equation is written on the first line of this new slide. And from that equation, one can derive equation 1 that relates the number of punctures with the number with the area of the black hole, of the edge of the horizon. So one can use, in thermal equilibrium, one can replace the formula for N into the formula for the entropy. So one has the choice. There are two expressions which are in thermal equilibrium coincide, they are the same, for the entropy. And those are the two equations that I write on the bottom of slide 25. And notice already that this expression for the entropy is independent of the scale that we have introduced. So we can go to slide number 26.
Now, I have a question about, let's say, the left-hand side here, because now, so there's a dependence in N, in the entropy, right?
Yes.
So it looks like sigma gamma is some kind of chemical potential.
That's right.
Hello?
Yes, I'm listening.
I think there's a dependence in N, in the entropy, right? So it looks like sigma of gamma is some kind of chemical potential. Can you comment on that? Because usually in order to have chemical potential, I mean, there's no chemical potential for bosonic system. You need, you know, there's a notion of chemical potential for fermionic system where there's a well-defined notion of numbers of puncture. And here, in some sense, you're assuming that there is such a number of puncture operator which is well-defined and physically meaningful.
I am assuming that there is a number of puncture operator, that the states of the azimuthal horizon are labeled by N in addition to all the spins of the punctures, which I think it's a fact in the azimuthal horizon quantum models that we have.
And is the system bosonic or fermionic?
I'm not sure if I answer that question.
In general, to be able to define such a number of operators, you need to have some property of the system you're studying.
The system is treated as with Boltzmann statistics, as you know. Now, the chemical potential in the case of photons, if that's what you're referring to, is zero because photons can have zero energy. I mean, they don't have any rest mass. So in the analogy, here these things are more like particles, which naturally should have a chemical potential because of the area gap. Adding or removing a puncture means changing the energy of the system in a certain amount. So the statistical mechanical counter side of this is the chemical potential, which essentially tells you how much the energy changes when you add or remove a puncture. So yes, there will be a chemical potential. But in thermal equilibrium, the important thing is that the entropy is just proportional to the area, as in the usual setting. So if you think in thermal equilibrium, the number of punctures is related to the area of the black hole. And so you can, at thermal equilibrium, so in the stationary situation, the entropy is still proportional to the area, and there is some prefactor that depends on the immunity parameter. So let's go to slide number 26. Now, the fact that the entropy is not exactly one-fourth of the area, is that, so the entropy we're claiming is some function of the immunity parameter that is written there on the right-hand side, on top of slide number 26, is the area times a function of the immunity parameter. is there any problem with the semi-classical consistency? And I want to claim that there is no problem. And let me argue as follows. So if you look at equation 2, in equation 2, on the left-hand side of equation 2, I am writing the first law as it comes from the statistical mechanical treatment. So there are two things. There is a thermodynamical first law, and there is something that I like to call the geometric first law. So we will do this first at the local level. So if you use just this picture that we are, and that for all practical purposes, for the calculations that we are doing now, is the correct picture, that we have a gas of punctures with, which can be seen as particles with a funny Hamiltonian, then it falls. Then from there, you obtain the version of the first law that you see on the left of equation 2, where mu bar is what you were referring to, Laurent, is the chemical potential. The chemical potential comes from a calculation. The chemical potential is nothing else but the temperature times the derivative of the entropy with respect to the number of particles. And looking at equation 1, then you can easily compute the chemical potential and conclude that this is kappa bar over 2 pi times the function sigma of gamma that we introduced in the previous slide. Now, in thermal equilibrium, the right-hand side of, the left-hand side of equation 2 is exactly the same thing as the left-hand side, as you can see, right? If you use the form 1 of any of the two forms of the entropy, then you would conclude that. So the usual geometric first law that we have derived using Einstein's equations is on the right, and the statistical thermodynamical first law is on the left. So there is no inconsistency in claiming that the entropy is not proportional, it's not just one-fourth of the area, because the difference is taken care of by this correction of the first law that contains a chemical potential. Maybe at the local level this is a bit obscure, but I can translate all this back to the global level, at least if we imagine that we are in the context of a stationary black hole. We have a stationary space-time, and that is a little flat, et cetera, et cetera. And write equation 4, so equation 4 follows from 2, and we see that there are two things. There is the geometric first law, the usual thing on the right, which is just the same thing as the first law written on the left. The only thing is that what we call entropy is not just area over 4, but what is given in equation 1. This is an important point. I'm not sure if I'm being clear. So the point is that if I look at the first law, look at the equation 4 again on the right, imagine before Hawking's calculation, there was no way of saying what was the entropy. And that's why Bekenstein could only argue that the entropy would be proportional to the area, because there is an ambiguity here. One can scale the notion of entropy by a factor if one appropriately rescales the notion of temperature by a factor. The fact that Hawking computes explicitly the temperature fixes this ambiguity and tells us that from the first law, in principle, the entropy should be one-fourth of the area. The point I'm making here is that there is another ambiguity. And from the fundamental theory of loop quantum gravity, this ambiguity gets realized and is to add to the one-fourth of the area value of the entropy a chemical potential divided by the temperature times the number of punctures. Or if you want, so the proportionality, so the one-fourth, the entropy can be a different function than one-fourth times the area, and this will still be in agreement with the semi-classical calculation of Hawking, which is only the calculation of the value of the temperature. Hawking does not compute the entropy, he computes only the temperature. So having this equivalence between this geometric first law that we derive with Einstein's equations and the first law that we derive from the fundamental loop quantum gravity model for the black hole tell us that having this entropy not being proportional, not being one-fourth of the area, is perfectly fine. So all values of the emissivity parameter are, in principle, a priori acceptable.
Can I ask a question about this chemical potential. I'm puzzled by one thing, is that in the definition of the chemical potential, it's only the immediate parameter that enters. So there's no H-bar or Planck length that appears. So we're thinking in some kind of semi-classical limit, it means that this value of the chemical potential survives. For instance, if I send gamma to zero, I get that sigma goes to infinity, for instance. So how can I understand that this chemical potential seems to be purely classical?
No, the chemical potential has an H-bar in front.
Where? In your
yeah.
definition, page 24, there's no H-bar nowhere.
Yeah, because I have... No, there is no H-bar in front of sigma, but there is an H-bar in equation 3 that I have set to... Okay. Mu has an H-bar.
So sigma, okay. So the entropy contains... So in the entropy, there's still a dependence of... there's a survival at the semi-classical limit. So this is maybe the formula,
yeah,
the one I'm looking at, which...
Yes, I mean, the point is that according... The point is that the entropy of semi-classical black hole, the point we're making here is that the entropy of a semi-classical black hole is not one-fourth of the area. It's something that does depend on the emissivity parameter. But this is not in contradiction with the first law.
So how do I understand the fact that, for instance, sigma gamma goes to infinity when I get rid of the spectrum? Like if I take gamma goes to zero, so there's no more any spectrum, then I get an infinite entropy. I mean, if you think this sigma is now a physical entity, then we have to be able to understand it in some other way. That's what I'm trying to think of.
Yeah. Gamma going to zero is a delicate limit in general. We know that everything we do is not well defined in the gamma equals zero case.
Yeah.
So, of course, if we take this new viewpoint, one has to study these different issues in detail. In the gamma going to zero limit, the number of particles goes to infinity, right? The number of punctures I'm not sure because n is given by equation one. I don't know. I can, of course, all these things have to be studied in detail.
Okay.
The number of punctures, yeah, I write that, so it must be true. On top of, below equation one, we say that for, in page 25, so for fixed value, the macroscopic area A, the number of punctures grows without limit as gamma goes to zero. So this is what one would expect, right? The entropy blows up.
Yeah.
Okay. But the important thing is that there is an H bar in front of mu, and I should have written this. Okay. I hope there are no more questions. I hope it's clear. What the point is very simple, but quite confusing sometimes. So what we are saying is, again, recall that Hawking computes temperature only and infers the entropy from the geometric first law. What we are saying is that when you look at the geometric first law, namely the right-hand side of equation 4 in page 26, you can still, even if you know what temperature is, you cannot be sure about what the value of the entropy is, because that equation is just equivalent to what I write on the left-hand side, and from the left-hand side you get an entropy which is given by one and not just one-fourth of the area. That's the point. It's very simple. So go go to slide 27. In slide 27, I just revisit the usual case. And so the old view in which one fixes the emissivity parameter now corresponds to a particular case. So if we, in the particular case, is contained in the, in corresponds exactly. So what one has been doing, according to the view that we are presenting here, what we have been doing before is to compute the entropy under the hidden assumption that of a vanishing chemical potential. Where we are, what we are pointing out here is that that assumption need not be taken. Perhaps, and that will open all sorts of new phenomenology. So the entropy computed in the previous formalism is given by equation one. One obtains some gamma naught over gamma times 1/4 of the area. I can write this equation in terms of our local notion of energy. I only do that just to be able to compute the temperature out of equation one. The temperature is related to the change of the entropy respect to changes in the energy. This is equation two. And we want this temperature, this is our physical input, to be equal to the Unruh temperature, because being the local temperature being the Unruh temperature is just the same thing as asking that the temperature at infinity is the Hawking temperature. So we must require equation two. But from equation one and two, you see that the only way to satisfy two and, is to set gamma naught equal to gamma equal to gamma naught. So just compute the derivative of one with respect to the energy, and you obtain the expected result only if gamma naught is equal to if gamma is equal to gamma naught, and gamma naught is nothing else but the value of gamma that makes the argument of the log in the definition of sigma of gamma equal to one, as you may recall. So that there is nothing wrong with that calculation. It just corresponds to a very special case where the chemical potential is equal to zero. So we can go to slide 28. 28 is just the same as 26. I just put it twice in case I needed to say something that I don't remember now, but if, in case you had questions. So we can go to 29 and start with the conclusions. So a local definition is needed in order to deal with black holes in quantum gravity. Isolated horizons is the suitable boundary condition. Yet there is a little bit more. We need an input that says that the near horizon geometry is close to Schwarzschild. And this input, we introduce it by setting, from the point of view of this canonical ensemble calculation, the temperature to the Unruh temperature. Again, this is not a new input and has been implicitly used in the previous derivations. For instance, when we fix gamma equal to gamma naught, as I illustrated in the previous slide. So at the classical level, we claim there is a way of presenting a preferred notion. I mean, there is a preferred notion of stationary observers. These are the good ones, the observers that are good for doing statistical mechanics with our system, with our local system, which is the horizon. These observers have a unique notion of energy, of quasi-local energy, which is proportional to the area. And this is a very good news because the area is the simplest operator in loop quantum gravity. So in the quantum theory, this will this leads to several physical intuitions that we have evolved. There is a universal surface gravity for these observers, which matches an intuitive viewpoint from that says that the geometry is Rindler-like close to the horizon. And there is a local first law that relates changes in energy with changes in area. This first law, as I tried to illustrate in several examples, and in particular in this Baidya example, which is the simplest one, is dynamically natured, so we can talk about area changing from an initially stationary situation to a final stationary situation. We think that we can translate this, we can generalize this to nice things in the context of flat space-time, and that there are versions of these laws for Rindler horizons and for Rindler-like horizons, like now surfaces in light fronts in Minkowski space-time. These are things that we are looking into with Ed and Diego Forni from Argentina. At the quantum level, the area gap of loop quantum gravity is an energy gap in the local formulation. So it is natural to think of the existence of a non-trivial chemical potential. The entropy computation, so we are in page 30. The entropy computation yields an entropy formula that is consistent with Hawking semi-classical calculation for all values of, in principle, a priori for all values of the emissivity parameter gamma. The entropy is given there in point one. It's a function of area and the number of punctures. There is a mistake there. There should be sigma instead of mu. And of course, one can rewrite this as a function of the area alone, as I showed before. There's a chemical potential. The physics of the emissivity parameter is encoded in the chemical potential, where this function sigma of gamma appears. If gamma is equal to gamma naught, then we are just in a particular case where mu is equal to zero. The usual law, first law, gets a quantum correction from loop quantum gravity, but so only when we write the first law in terms of entropy, angular momentum, charge, and number of punctures, but in terms of the usual geometric quantities, this is nothing else but a rewriting of the usual geometric first law. There are, if we don't need to fix the emissivity parameter, then there will be a whole manifold of possible observational effects associated to the emissivity parameter. I know that Jacobo and Enrique are looking into some calculations related to these things, and also Daniele Pranzetti is studying related issues. In particular, he's studying the possibility of describing dynamics at the quantum level very close to the horizon. I think I will stop here. So if there are questions about these possible observational effects, I can, maybe it would be good if I have some questions, I can show these transparencies that I didn't show, but I'd like to thank you very much for your attention now.
Alejandro, it's very late, and I'm sure people have tons of questions, so why don't you go ahead and show those transparencies, and then we quit?
Another possibility, Jorge, might be that we don't have anything planned for next week.
Correct.
Because I think there are tons of questions, and also maybe it might be a good idea for people to think about it and so on.
Yeah, so I had in mind exactly that.
That might be even better, that you can, both, first we can start with some, you know, various questions. As you say, there are tons. And this is very fascinating. That's why there are tons of questions, I guess. But on the other hand, we are lost about three-quarters of the audience now here at Penn State.
So shall we continue, finish here and continue next week then?
There's a problem. I am not available on Tuesday next week. At some point I wanted to change it for other reasons to Tuesday, but I am not available on Tuesday. But maybe we can start a discussion by email and try to plan another seminar later.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Would that be okay?
Yes.
Okay. Should I show you the slide?
To see the slides is really important to have discussion, right? Because we can all see the slides anyway.
Right.
Yeah, you're right. Okay.
Okay, so let's conclude here.
Thank you for your attention, and let's see when we can talk again.
Thank you.
Bye.